Join us this week as we descend into the darker side of human nature and uncover the shadows that dwell in the unknown. From chilling true crime and gruesome murders to spine-tingling paranormal encounters that defy explanation, we're peeling back the curtain on things that go bump in the night. So grab a flashlight and maybe a blanket, because you're listening to The Guilty and the Ghostly.
Wow.
It's crazy.
We're closer to 30 than we are in zero.
Our little podcast baby is growing.
Hey!
So big.
I think whenever we hit 100 episodes, we should do a 100 party. Like 100 M&M cake.
Like with the kids when they have to do like 100 things on their little project. We should make Seth and Josh do a project and they have to glue 100 things. They would not do that.
Seth, Josh, don't listen to this episode.
They won't.
We're plotting.
Plotting your demise. Well, welcome back. We missed you last week.
Really?
Happy late birthday.
Thank you.
You're a little big girl now.
Yeah, I am.
So she had a little birthday party. The food was so good.
It was really
raspberry
good.
Cake was amazing. What was it? Nothing Bundt Cakes here in Tyler. They have the best Bundt Cakes, but they have a raspberry one. White chocolate raspberry is seriously like the best cake.
It really is. It's really good.
We went back to mom's the next day or maybe 2 days later, and the kids were fighting over who got the last piece, and they all got a fork and were like,
oh my gosh,
fighting for the last bit. But it was so good.
Yeah, it was really good.
Yeah. So we did a cool thing the other night.
What? What do we do? What are you talking about? We do a lot of cool things.
We do so many cool things. We got to be interviewed by the Paranormal War Room, which if I'm not mistaken, he's going to try to post it today. So if it's not up yet, it will be soon. We just kind of got to talk about our personal experiences with paranormal, and he's a really cool guy.
Add it up, yeah.
We'll have to do it again. I was nervous. I'm sure as you guys know, when I'm nervous, I talk fast.
She talks really fast, and she likes to talk over people.
It's ADHD, guys. That's not my fault. Actually, if I'm not mistaken, I'm pretty sure I did speech therapy as a kid because I talked too fast. They made me go to speech therapy for it.
Gosh. Yeah, we were just talking about how Audrey, whenever she speaks, she, like, has a projected voice, and I have more of, like, a
softer,
like, a inner circle type of voice. Like, yeah, kind of.
I think mine has a little bit more bass than what yours does, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, probably.
But you don't think about that stuff until you start recording things, and then you hear the difference in the different voices and stuff, and it's like, whoa, that is a lot different.
Like, I think I sound so much, like, deeper in tone than I actually am.
Really?
Yeah, like, in my head, I sound, like, low.
But you're not.
Yeah, I'm like really high-pitched voice.
Voices are weird. And then we announced the winner of our new alien. Well, he's not new anymore, but he finally has a name. Zorp was the winner. So actually our daughter. She's the one that came up with that one. It wasn't rigged, y'all. I didn't even tell them who created the names when I gave them. I just gave them the list of names. And Josh, Seth, and Tori picked out their favorites. And then we put their three favorites up and then let everybody vote on those. So Zorp was the winner. But since it was our daughter, she will be getting a boo basket. But...
because she really wants one.
Yeah, she really wants one. But I'm also going to get a hold of Brittany Little. So she was second place for... choosing, which was Bone Daddy.
Which, that could be his middle name. Zorp Bone Daddy.
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess his middle name is Bone, and his
last name's Daddy. Zorp Bone Daddy. So I'm going to get a hold of Brittany and get her a sweater. And then we did have a couple of other people that said they want sweaters, so maybe we can look at that and see.
Yeah, we can make different themes, you know, like different colors, fonts, like really anything.
I'm a hoodie girl or a crew. Actually, I like crew necks. Yeah, crew neck sweaters.
I'm really wearing one right now. Because hoodies, like, I guess because they're just sitting on my neck constantly, it makes my hair so tangled, like in the back.
Yeah. But I like the pocket of the hoodie, though.
I have a crew neck that has pockets.
See, that's what I like.
Or corduroy zip-ups. I love
Yeah.
those.
I don't like corduroy. Like, it looks cute on other people, but I don't like it on me. Yeah. Other than that, we've got a really sad story this week. I hope you didn't come here to get pumped up.
Do we ever come here to get pumped up?
Scary ones are fun.
The scary ones make me paranoid.
Yeah, well, which Tori stayed the night last night, Tori and Elizabeth, and we watched a movie, and I forgot it was based on a true story. So the next time Tori comes, I'm doing that one for her, and I cannot wait because you haven't done a scary story yet. So she's gonna be scared.
Yeah.
We're gonna scare her.
I'm scared.
I'm so scared.
And it's gonna be around Halloween time when we do
Yeah.
it, so it's gonna be perfect.
Perfect. Well, today's story is scary, but not because of ghosts, because of people, man. People be peopling, 100%.
Yeah.
So, well, no, because the woman does in the story too, so it's really both of them. I thought I heard somebody coming in, so I was waiting for them to come around the divider, but I guess they're not. Okay.
Audrey's hearing things.
I'm already paranoid, guys. They're coming after me. So this one is actually one of the more famous cases that we have covered too. We've not really covered huge, like widely known cases yet. And this one, at least for me, was one of the more well-known ones. And we are going to be covering J.C. Lee Dugard. So I actually read her book. So she wrote a book called A Stolen Life Memoir. And of course, I listened to it on Libby. So not only is it in her words, but she also read the book. She was the, what's that called? Narrator, I guess. She read
Yeah.
it. So not only are you getting her actual words, you hear it in her voice, which I think just adds that much more personal effect on it because you hear it 100% from her, from the reading it to the telling it and her emotions. It is a very hard read. She does go very much into detail, which I'm going to go ahead and give a trigger warning at the beginning of sexual assault, abuse, child sexual assault, kidnapping, basically any and all triggers in this story. It's rough. I don't go as much into detail as she does. I don't feel like that's my place to say, even though she put it in her book. I feel like that's her story to talk about. I mean, I loosely go over it, but I did not include super graphic details because I think that's just, I don't want it to be about the shock factor. I want it to the story. I want the focus to be on her actual story, if that makes sense. And it is a longer one. So, are you ready to jump in?
Yeah, I think I'm ready.
Do you?
I really hate these type of cases.
They hurt my heart.
Me too.
And I think this one, being a mom, seeing the mom's point of view, I think it hurt my heart even more. I'm trying not to even tear up now. To know what she went through, but also to know what the mother went through during the story. It's rough. It's definitely rough. Are you very familiar with it? No? All right. Well, this starts. J.C. Dugard was born May 3rd, 1980, in South Lake Tahoe, California. She lived with her mother, Terry. Her father really wasn't in the picture. J.C. would kind of, as she got older, would ask, like, "Where? Who's my dad? Or what's the story on my dad?" And her mom, Terry, would basically, she was pretty honest with her and just kind of broke it down. It was just like, he chose not to be in our lives. Like, that was his choice. That's nothing on you. He just chose not to be a part of our lives. And that's just kind of how they left it. Like, her mother would later remarry to Carl Proven when JC was about 7 years old. And JC did not get along with Carl
Oh
at all.
gosh.
At all. He was very critical of her, and she felt like he was, it was almost like he was always looking for an excuse to be mad at her or criticize her about anything she did. In her book, she talked about how he would even criticize the way she would eat. And mind you, this is a young girl. When she is actually kidnapped, she's at 11. I should have looked at when her mom remarried to him, but this is a young girl.
Like
Young,
seven.
probably, like really young. He would even criticize the way she would eat. There was times that he would be like, "Go sit in front of a mirror and eat so you can see how disgusting you are because your table manners are just so bad."
Oh my gosh,
Yeah.
who says that? Gosh.
She really felt like she couldn't do anything right in his eyes. He would even ground her for like very trivial things and just treated her like crap.
What was her mom doing?
I think it was, which without going into too much personal detail, I've been there, and I think when you're in that situation, you love the person, you know what they're doing isn't right, but maybe you don't feel like you have the voice to stand up for them, maybe, or the strength to stand up to them. I mean, obviously, her mom didn't really like it, but she did. I mean, it just
It ended up
continued.
happening.
Yeah. Carl was like super particular about things, and like it was obviously every kid needs to brush their teeth. Obviously, but he was like a stickler about it. Like, you have to brush your teeth every single morning, and if you didn't, you would get in trouble. Well, one day, one of JC's friends called and was like, "Hey, can JC go to the movies with us?" And Carl answered the phone. He's like, "Yeah, that's fine. She can go to the movies with you." And she's like, "All right, well, we'll be there by about this time to come pick her up." And he said, "Okay, we'll see you then." Gets off the phone. So that time comes. Friend comes to the no door, knocks on the door, and is like, "Hey, we're here to pick up JC from the movies." JC had no idea that they were even coming. Like, he never told her or anything. And they're like, "We're here to pick up JC from the movies." And he was like, "Well, JC didn't brush her teeth this morning, so she's not going. She's grounded." In which he knew that when he answered the phone. Like, he knew the whole time. He was just being a dick about it. And she was like,
Gosh.
I'll go brush my teeth right now. Like, I'll take care of it." And he
That is
would
so
not.
manipulative. Like, what?
Yeah, and he would not. They ended up leaving. He wouldn't let her go to the movies with him.
Because she didn't brush her teeth?
Yeah. And why didn't he say that to begin with? Like, if he was going to be a
Yeah.
stickler about it, he could have been like, she got in trouble for not doing what she was supposed to do today. Maybe next time. But he literally made them come all the way out to pick her up and, like, made it a whole scene about it, about her not brushing her teeth. A little girl. Tiny little girl. In 1990, JC's little sister Shayna was born. Carl was very affectionate and loving to Shayna, but still treated JC like crap and was really hard on her. And so that really made JC struggle because she sees the love that he has for her little sister, which is his own child, but still treated her so differently. And she really struggled with that and seeing that.
I feel like any kid that sees that happening struggles with
Oh, it's
that, you
hard.
know? Like, you should never do that. Treating your own kids a different way opposed to like your stepkid, that's so psychologically
Manipulative.
is, I think it's categorized as childhood trauma or something like that.
Oh,
Like, it
yeah.
can mess with the child's mind
It
throughout
did.
life.
I mean, I grew up with it. I went through it. Had a, I guess I won't name him, but a stepfather, which that's one thing I can say. We haven't really gone into full detail about like our family dynamic. So,
Yeah.
Tori, Seth, and I share the same mom. But we have different dads. Tori's dad has been like he's dad to me. I still have my biological dad. He's still dad to me, but Tori's dad also has stepped up and like he's poppy to my kids. He's my dad. Like he has never made us feel like anything but his children. But I have had a previous stepfather. I don't even want to call him that. He
Oh.
was awful, but he was like that. He treated his child like she could do no wrong, perfect angel, like everything. And meanwhile, so he treated me like his own personal servant, like maid. Like he would make me do his laundry. And for months, years, you just hang up the clothes and it was fine. Well, one day he had it in his mind that I needed to, when I hang up his clothes, all the shirts had to be facing the same way. And I didn't do that. So he ripped them all out and made me go back and put them all up. I was the one
Just
that,
to be an
just to
asshole.
be an ass. I had to like clean up the whole house, my bedroom, bathroom. If his daughter came, I had to like cater to her 24/7.
How old were you?
Elementary age, so I'm trying to remember. Probably about sixth. It was about sixth, seventh grade, I guess. Fifth to seventh grade. And so when his daughter would come, it was just cater her, and I would see like him dote on her and her be this. There was another time where we had, the ice dispenser on the fridge, and you know how it has crushed and cubed? His daughter was allowed to get crushed ice anytime she wanted, like no issue. But if I wanted crushed ice, it was a problem. And like I would get grounded if I wanted crushed ice and would use the crushed ice dispenser on the fridge. Heck? Like, he would try to ground me all the time. And as I got older, I became more rebellious. And so he'd be like, you're grounded. And I'd be like, deuces, and be out the door. Like, that was a rough time. That was a rough time. So I fully understand this feeling that JC went through as far as, like, with her stepdad and what she was going through. Like, it's hard. It does affect you 100%. Well, shortly after they had Shayna, her sister, they had a break-in at their apartment. So they lived in an apartment. Somebody broke in. And that's when Terry and Carl decided, we need to move somewhere safer. So they moved to the town of Myers, which was just south of South Lake Tahoe. Since it was a smaller, safer town, they're like, good place to raise a family. So they moved there. And once they moved there, Carl insisted that JC started walking to the bus stop on her own.
How old was she?
This is right about 11 years old. This is right about the time that she was kidnapped. If JC really didn't want to, just get ready. JC really didn't want to because before they had moved, she was walking by herself, which at that time she felt okay. And she was harassed by a couple of guys. Like when she was walking down the road, they were like catcalling her. And again, this is a baby. This is a child. And these men were catcalling her and everything. And she ended up running away and like hiding in some bushes to get away from them. And as they passed by, she was able to go on home. So she did not feel comfortable walking to the bus stop by herself. She did not want to do it. Her mom, unfortunately, she really didn't want her to walk to the bus stop by herself either. But her mom worked like really crazy hours. Like she pretty much had to go to work almost like in the middle of the night, like early in the morning, like 2-3 o'clock in the morning, her mom would have to. So she couldn't really walk her to the bus stop. There was no other choice, really. And then the baby's sleeping. So Carl, I'm sure, used that as an excuse. Well, I don't want to get the baby up, so she can just walk by herself. So she started doing it. And on June 10th, it was just another morning for JC. She had heard her mother, this part tore my heart open. She heard her mother leave for work and she was a little down because that night before she went to bed, she specifically asked her mom, can you please come tell me goodbye before you leave in the morning and like give me a kiss goodbye? Mom promised. She's like, I promise I'll do it. She's like, okay. So the next morning she heard her mom leave for work and she left without saying goodbye. So her mom woke up late and was running late. She's like, which I understand as a mom, it happens. Like it happens. She woke up late. She did not feel like she had time to go, you know, wake her child up and give her a kiss and go through that whole routine. So she just left and didn't tell JC goodbye. That morning, JC got up and after her mom had left, after she heard her mom leave, she's like, all right, I'm going to go ahead and get up. So she got up. She put her favorite outfit on, which was some little pink pants, had a shirt with like a little kitty on it and her pink jacket. Like that was her favorite outfit. She was trying to find a specific ring that her mom had given her, but she could not find it anywhere. She could not find it. She looked all over. She was running late. She's like, all right, well, I'm just going to put this other ring on that she had, that her mom had given her. It was a little small, so I think she ended up putting it like on her pinky or something, but she was like, all right, this'll work, whatever. Oh, after she put the ring on, she decided, well, I'm just going to go peek on my sister, see if she's still asleep. She was. She looked in. She was still sleeping. And as the morning went on, she just started feeling off, almost kind of nauseous, I guess. And she had actually thought about asking Carl if she could just stay home from school that day because she wasn't feeling good. But then she's like, I really don't want to piss him off. I really don't want to deal with him. I don't want to be stuck in the house with him all day. So I'm just going to fight through it. Like I'm not doing it. So she ended up making herself a bowl of oatmeal. And again, this kind of goes back to her trauma with her stepfather. She said the whole time she was eating the oatmeal, she was trying to hurry and eat so she could get on the bus in time. And the whole time she's like, I really hope Carl does not see me how I'm eating this because he would have something to say and heartbreaking. So she powered through, ate the oatmeal, hurried up and got ready. And she's like, you know what? I'm going to peek at my sister. Just one. She loved her baby sister. Like she idolized her baby sister. She loved her. She's like, I'm going to peek on her one more time. She was still asleep. So she's like, all right, gotta go. She ended up grabbing like a little carrot out of the fridge. They had a little rabbit and she went and fed the rabbit. They had a little cat. She loved on the cat. And then she started walking to the bus stop. Well, of course, Carl had a certain, like, he had a certain way for her to walk to the bus stop. Like, there's a couple of different ways that she could go, but he wanted this one specific way for her to walk to the bus stop, which I will say it was for safety reasons because this certain road, if you went on certain sides of it, it was really hard to see for cars to see people walking on the side of the road. So he wanted her to walk on the other side so that when they were coming, they could see her. So it was for like a safety reason that he wanted her to walk this certain way. And I guess like normal morning routine, he would hear her walk out the door. He'd stand on the porch, kind of watch her walk to the bus stop and get on the bus and go on. Well, on the way, and this tells you how young she was. On the way, she's thinking of her upcoming summer plans because they're almost out of school. It's June 10th, but they're still in school. But they're fixing to be out of school. They're like at the end stretch. But that's late. That's pretty late.
What year was this?
1990. So she and her friend, they actually wanted to work on, it was called a dude ranch or like a horse ranch for the summer. They loved animals and they're like, that would be perfect, make a little money. And so she's like, I've got to figure out a way to get my parents to like sign off on this and let me work at this ranch. She was also excited about a class trip, going to a water park, and was trying to think, you know, she hadn't started shaving yet and she was getting to the point where she wanted to, like, her body's changing. And yeah, I mean, you're 11 years old, you're 11 year old little girl, and you're fixing to go on this class trip to a water park wearing a swimsuit. So she's like, I need to ask my mom if I can shave, but it's kind of embarrassing, I don't know how to ask her. So she's like just going through all that in her head while she's walking to the bus stop. All of a sudden, a vehicle pulls up next to her and rolls down the window. Before she even gets a chance to like acknowledge him, the couple starts asking for directions. But before JC can even respond, the man shoves his hand out of the window, startling JC. He's holding something black in his hand, and all of a sudden she hears a crackling noise. The man has hit her with a taser, and JC hits the ground. Like quickly, within seconds, this is happening. She tried to get away. There were actually some bushes behind her, and she was trying to scoot her way backwards into the bushes, kind of like she had done that one time, just to put space between her and this man. She even states in her book that the last thing that she remembers touching was a pine cone when she was trying to get away from him. Her body felt heavy. Her arms and legs were not responding to what she was telling them to do. The two people jump out of the car, grab her, and put a blanket over her head and throw her into the floorboard of the car. So that quickly.
Oh my gosh.
It's rough. And in the book, you know, she even has a pine cone on the cover, and she said that through therapy and working with her therapist, she has discovered that she thinks she's so obsessed with pine cones because that was the last thing she touched before her freedom was taken away from her. And to her, that's like a representation of her freedom before she was taken, and that's why she's so obsessed with them now. And I was like, it is so heartbreaking. It's a hard one. Well, meanwhile, Carl had heard a scream, and so he's like, oh shit, something's happening. So he grabs a bicycle that they had and starts riding this bicycle, trying to chase down this car. Like, he's seen it from far away, but wasn't close enough to where he could see the license plate or anything. So he's pedaling on this bicycle trying to catch this car, but they end up losing him. So then he starts going back to the house screaming, you know, someone call 911, they just took my daughter, please help. There were other kids waiting for the bus stop that witnessed this happen, because this, again, they're waiting for the bus in the morning. This is
Yeah, what the hell?
broad daylight. They pull up and snatch this little girl.
Did they live in a pretty like crimey area?
It was a pretty safe area. There was one kidnapping. I should have looked at the crime statistics, but I didn't. But I know specifically there was 3 years before JC was taken, there was two little girls. It was the very first time their mom let them go to the convenience store by themselves. They went to the convenience store, left their scooters outside, and then they came out, and one scooter was like over by a car. Like, it wasn't where they left it, and the other scooter was. We're like, well, that's weird. And the girl's like, oh, it's fine, I'm gonna go grab my scooter and we'll go home. She goes to grab her scooter from by that car, and somebody snatches her and takes her. She still has not been found to this day. They still don't know what happened to her.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So that's another heartbreaking one. Carl was able to get an exact description of a man and a woman that were in a car that had just abducted JC, that he was able to give like the make and model of the car. He couldn't see like detailed descriptions, but he's like, one was a man and one was a woman, I can tell you that much. And the other witnesses that were there were able to collaborate his story. Because again, it's broad daylight. Kids,
yeah, everyone saw it happen. Yeah. Why was no one helping?
I think it was because it was a bus stop kind of on its own. So everybody else was kind of, and it happened so fast. Like it happened so fast. They literally pulled up, started asking for directions, hit her with a stun gun, jumped out, grabbed her, threw her in the car and took off.
What the heck? Who does that?
So fast. However, no one was able to get the license plate number. So they did not have a license plate number. They immediately start a search with the FBI. They set up traffic stops, searching for cars, looking for JC. They began putting up missing posters everywhere. And let me show you a picture of sweet baby JC.
Sweetheart. Oh my gosh, she's so little.
So pretty. Like you can just... She's so sweet. So sweet. So while they were doing this, classmates, they started like trying to help put up missing posters. They started wearing pink so that like to show support to her parents because JC's favorite color was pink. It really shook the community. Like it was really hard for all of them. JC's abduction was featured on the television show America's Most Wanted on June 14th in 1991. So just 4 days after she went missing, they put her story on, hoping to bring attention to the case. It did bring in like a lot of leads, but nothing solid that they could find anything. Carl and Terry made multiple media appearances and led search parties trying to find JC. This brought in a bunch of leads, but again, nothing turned up. Early in the investigation, both Carl and JC's biological dad, Ken, were suspects and had to be ruled out. Ken was ruled out very quickly. He had not reached out to her. Like, he was ruled out. He was not even...
In question.
Yeah, basically ruled him out pretty quick. However, because of Carl and... JC's relationship, because it was so strained, they really dug deep on him, thinking he had something to do with it. Even though he witnessed somebody taking him, they're like, well, did you hire somebody taking her? Like, were you a part of it? There were a lot of rumors going around saying that, like, maybe he made advances towards JC and she turned him down. He got mad and made up this elaborate story. Like, it was...
Dang! Everybody was going crazy.
It was really hard. Of course, they didn't find anything to, you know, confirm these rumors. Oh, these allegations slowly began affecting Carl and his relationship with Terry. Of course, Terry was devastated, and every June, she basically would just become completely inconsolable. She was haunted with not going into her daughter's room early that morning to wake her up and give her a hug and kiss goodbye, because that very next day was when she was kidnapped. And that, again, that resonates with me so much. Every night I have to go in and tell my kids goodnight, and two of them are huggers, one of them is not. I give the two huggers a hug.
Which one?
May. May and I are so much alike, it's not even funny. She gives me a goodnight, love you, goodnight, love you. And then that's it. I shut her door. But if I don't tell them goodnight and put my eyes on them in their bed before I go to sleep, I don't sleep. Like, I am restless. Something in my mind is like, because you didn't go tell them goodnight and you love them, like, something's going to happen in the middle of the night. And
so what do you do when they stay the night with friends? You call them?
Mm-hmm.
You're crazy!
I know. So that hurts my heart. That hurts my mama heart a lot. Terry and Carl would eventually separate. In a later interview, Carl said the only way he was able to get through all of this is just hoping and believing that a family that had wanted a child of their own and couldn't maybe had taken her. Hoping that she was living a safe, happy life somewhere. So just out of curiosity, I decided to look up family versus non-family abduction statistics. So family abductions account for the majority of missing child cases. In 2023, 4.1% of the 28,886 missing children cases reported to the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children were family abductions. Notably, 59% of all Amber Alerts issued that year were related to family abduction. So somebody in their family or someone that is connected to their family kidnapped them. Non-family abductions are the rarest type, making up only 1% of missing children cases reported to
Dang.
CMEC. So yeah, very rare. Very rare. Terry kept her daughter's name in the media with vigils. They did like parades, marches. Parades may not be the right word, but like anything that they could use to get her daughter's name out there, she did it. Like she wanted her daughter's name out there. She was trying to find her. Terry and JC would often sit outside and look at the moon when she was younger. So when Terry wanted to talk to her daughter, after she had gone missing, she would go outside and like just talk to the moon. For 18 years. Missing for 18 years. Unbeknownst to Terry, nearly 200 miles away in Antioch, California, JC was still alive 18 years later.
What?
And so now we're going to go back to the day of her abduction. Once the kidnapper hit JC with a taser and threw a blanket over her, they put her in the back seat floorboard of the car, covered her with a blanket and heavy objects so she couldn't move. Like she was trying to move, like maneuver to see what was happening. She could not move her body. Like she was stuck
My
in the floorboard.
gosh, what did they have on her? Did they ever say?
I never did see what they actually put on her, no. While all this was happening, and again, this just breaks my heart, JC realized that she had wet herself. I'm sure the fear, the taser,
Yeah.
everything. Yeah. So she had, not only is she stuck under this blanket with all this weight on her, she had accidentally wet herself and she begins overheating because it is so hot in that car. She's scared that she's going to throw up, but knew if she did, she would end up choking on it because there was no way for her to move. So she knew if she got sick, she would choke on it and die.
Oh my gosh, that is horrible.
So she ends up fighting through it, but she does end up passing out. Like she just passes out. She later comes to, wakes up, and the car has stopped, and one of the abductors takes the blanket off her head, and he offers her a drink, and even says, "Don't worry, I've got two straws, so you don't have to worry about my germs." Like, bro, you just kidnapped me.
Yeah,
Like, what
like
are you
what?
talking about? Blows my mind away. Well, of course, she's been overheated. Like, she takes the drink because she needs something. What else is she supposed to do, you know? And while she's drinking the water that he gave her, the abductor laughs and says, "I can't believe we got away with it." Insane. Once she finishes the drink, they end up putting her back in the car and cover her back up with the blanket and all the heavy stuff, and they start driving again. At this point, she has no idea how much time has passed. She doesn't know how far they've gone. Like, she has no clue. Well, she notices that the car's kind of slowly coming, like slowing down, and then like the abductors are kind of talking back and forth. She can't hear every word, but she can hear them communicating. And she hears something about their home, like they're talking about their home, and the car suddenly comes to a stop, and she realizes they've taken me to their house. They begin getting JC out of the car, and the man that attacked her told her that they have very big, mean, and aggressive dogs, and that she needed to stay very close to him and stay very quiet because if she didn't, these dogs would attack her. Like they would basically rip her to shreds. So, of course, now she's terrified because she's been taken from her
Yeah,
home,
like,
shoved in a
what is he
car,
even trying to do with
and
their head?
yeah, and now he's telling her that he's got these great big mean dogs. And she does see two big, I think they were Dobermans, like, and those are big dogs. Those are
Yeah,
scary
those are
dogs.
huge dogs.
They go ahead and keep the blanket over her head and basically just lead her into the house. Trigger warning. Once they get into the house, he leads her to the bathroom, tells her to remove all of her clothes, which of course she fights against, and forces her to take a shower with him. In the book, she mentions the ring that she put on that morning. He made her remove all of her clothes, but he missed her ring, and she said just having that ring on her finger brought her some comfort.
My gosh.
I'm not laughing because it's funny. I'm laughing because if I don't, I'm going to cry. Like, it is so hard. And like I said, when you read the book, especially when you listen to it and you hear it in her words, it's insane. It's really insane. He assaulted her while they were in the bathroom. He made her get out and he would not give her clothes back. She's like, "Can I put my clothes back on?" He's like, "No, you can't." He put the blanket back over her head and he leads her to the back, what she assumes is their backyard, to a very small shed, which come to find out was soundproof, completely naked, nothing but the blanket over her head. The only thing inside was of that soundproof shed was a pallet of blankets and a single window that was covered up with a towel. He would then handcuff JC and leave her all alone in the shed. It had no AC, no ventilation system, so it was very hot and stuffy, which I think I have a picture of where he kept her. That white building is what I believe that he kept her in. There's no windows, there's no ventilation system. It's just a white shed, which I think I go into it later. He was a quote unquote musician, and that was his studio. So he literally had it all soundproofed and everything for his studio, and that's what he was keeping her locked in. He would then handcuff JC and leave her all alone in the shed that had no AC, no ventilation system. And JC wrote in her book that the abductor had actually used fuzzy handcuffs. He told her it was because it wouldn't hurt her as much if he used the fuzzy handcuffs. And you'll see that through this story. Like, he treats her so badly, but he's like, "But I'm doing this for your comfort. I'm going to allow this because it's good for you." Like, he continuously does that and manipulates her. And I couldn't imagine. He would leave her alone in the locked, empty shed for hours. No access to food, no drinks, not even a bathroom, just handcuffed in that shed. That's it. He would come in once a day to bring her food, which was normally fast food, and a bucket to use the bathroom. Once a day. I do not know how she did it. She did try to keep track of time, but all she had was the window covered by a towel at times, and it was hard to tell if it was day, if it was night, if she fell asleep, how much time had passed. Like, it was really hard for her to keep track of how long she had been in there. There was no TV, no mental stimulation. He was the only thing she had to survive at the time. Due to the lack of stimulation, she began to almost look forward to his visits because at least it was, I get food, I get water, I can use the bathroom, I can talk to somebody. Like, it just would help break up the mundane, just being handcuffed and locked alone in a shed. Through their conversations, she was able to find out his name was Philip Garrido, and the shed that he was keeping her in was actually a recording studio. Attached to this shed was another room that he would store his instruments in, and he would even have friends come over to play music. And when they came over, he would take JC and lock her somewhere else in the house. And as soon as they were gone, he would just take her right back out there and lock her back up. So they were literally playing music in the studio that he kept a girl held captive in.
Where was the girl that helped him kidnap her at this time?
We're getting there.
Don't piss me off, Audrey. Don't piss me
Oh, girl, you're
off.
gonna get it. You're gonna be pissed. He did eventually quit cuffing her and, so kind of him, added an AC unit or some kind of ventilation system to the studio. Like, how sweet. He even ended up giving her a bucket at the shed to use the bathroom when he wasn't there because he is just so freaking considerate.
How many years had passed since this advancement?
We're still, I'm not sure because again, this was on her point of view. So it was really hard to keep track of time, how much time has passed, but it was not quickly. Like, she slowly was getting these things. She couldn't, she's even when she started writing the book, she said, "I know it's very confusing on how I write this, but it was confusing for me. I had no idea what was going on. I couldn't tell what time of day it was. I had no TV, no way to keep track of days. Like, it was all very confusing." Philip would later tell JC that he took her. Oh, this pisses me off. He took her because he had a sex problem and she could help him ensure that nobody else would get hurt as long as he had her. because he wouldn't have to do it to anybody else. So you're telling the sweet baby child that you just took from her family and you are assaulting, abusing, holding captive, that she's the only thing protecting anybody else from suffering these consequences. Can you imagine the mental? I can't with this guy.
How many years did he end up getting?
We'll get there. At one point, he even gave her a kitten. She was so excited just to finally have a companion in the room and just have somebody to, I mean, yeah, obviously she's not on a cup. Cat's not going to talk back, but you know, just have that comfort. And she loved animals anyways. But shortly after, he would end up taking it away and be like, he's too much of a nuisance. Like, it's too much of a problem. You're not keeping it. So he would let her have them for like 6 months and then be like, that's mine. Give it back and take it away. And this would happen like time and time again while she's being held captive. He would give her something and be like, not anymore. It's mine. Give it back and take it away. As time went on, JC would eventually meet the second abductor. So this is the second person that you asked about. The second abductor, Philip's wife, Nancy Garrido. At first, Nancy...
What the hell? What the hell?
You just wait.
Like, what?
His wife helped him abduct this girl. But just
and wait. And knew everything was going on?
Just wait. At first, Nancy seemed standoffish towards JC. Philip would tell JC it was because Nancy was jealous of her and that JC needed to work harder at befriending Nancy. Because she's uncomfortable. What?
You're the one who kidnapped her, huh?
Excuse the shit out of me?
Literally. What? Like, what are you talking about?
As months went by, Nancy did start spending more time with JC, but she still kind of acted... JC kind of talked about how she would act distant. Like, sometimes they'd be okay. Like, they could just have a normal communication. And she said it was almost like a mother figure to her. But at other times, she was very distant and very cold towards her. Kind of like she resented her. And it's like, you brought her here. Yeah. You helped your husband and brought this child here. What are you talking
about?
Like,
it's not her fault that she is in your shed. Like, you brought this on yourself. Like, what are you talking about?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh my gosh, I hope they died.
They also continued getting her other kittens and taking them away. While she had them, she would teach them tricks and bond with them. Like, she even would keep diaries, and it was almost like a baby book for these kittens. She'd be like, 1 month old, and this is what it's doing, and this is what I've taught it, and these are its characteristics. And you could tell she loved these cats so much and would have such a good bond with them. But like I said, after about 6 months or so, Philip would come in and be like, nope, we're getting rid of it.
What does Philip look like? Let me see what this rat the... Oh, I can't even say this on the podcast.
Scum.
This raggedy ass, head ass, dumb ass bitch. Oh my fuck. You're joking.
And this is Nancy.
If she's ugly, I'm gonna be even more mad. Don't tell me this. I hope they both died in prison.
That's Nancy. And this
I don't even care if I get canceled. They deserve death. What is wrong with these people? Oh my gosh. This is horrible.
18 years this girl went through this. And we're not even at the worst part.
Even like the manipulation started so early with like giving her something she loves, letting her fall in love with it, letting her bond with it, and then being like
taking it. The first night that they brought her to the house, and after the whole shower ordeal, like, of course, JC was breaking down. Like, she was so upset. She was terrified. She was hurt. Like, he was, like, trying to comfort her and, like, hug her and be like, it's okay. That's enough for today. Like, you're gonna be okay. And it's like, how can you be such a deplorable human
he
being?
He deserves to be chopped up in a slaughterhouse.
Fucking chopped up pig. And send him to the fishes.
He's a fucking pig. Thank you, next hoe. Get Taylor Swift on his ass.
Like, I just, like I said, this was one of the hardest ones that... It's rough. Well, at one point, Philip ended up disappearing for like a week, and JC had no idea where he went. Like, he was just gone. And so Nancy had to come in and take care of JC. And she kind of said, we kind of bonded while he was gone. Like, she was still kind of distant, but they were doing better. And they would slowly give her more and more quote unquote freedom. Like, well, I'm getting ahead of myself. We'll talk about it in a minute.
Okay.
So he disappeared, and her and Nancy kind of, I guess, bonded. I mean, when I say that term very loosely, but you know what I mean. Philip would have what he would call runs. He's like, I'm going on a run. And JC, being so small and innocent, she's like, in the book, she's like, I know this fool ain't running. Like, I know he ain't running anywhere. What is he talking about? And then it gets really dark. He would basically go and get, she called it crank or speed. He would go get speed and bring it home. And he would lock her in a room with him for hours and sometimes days at a time while he did speed. He told her it was her job to fulfill all of his fantasies and basically do anything that he wanted to do to her, and she should allow that to happen.
And so what is a speed?
Speed?
A drug?
Drugs, yeah.
What type of drug is that?
To be honest, I don't know. I'm not very drug savvy. Let's look up.
So like cocaine, like another word for cocaine?
I'm going to be on FBI's like.
Yeah, you are. They're going to be like, what the hell are you looking up? Is this Josh's work computer?
No.
Okay, good. No.
Okay, so what is speed? Amphetamine. Speed typically refers to amphetamine sulfate or methamphetamine, both of which are central nervous system. So meth.
So meth.
Yeah.
What the?
Yeah. So he would go get speed, meth, whatever, lock her in the room with him for hours, days at a time while he did unimaginable things to her. Like, I don't know how she made it through this. Like, what he did to her, I don't know how she mentally survived, not even just physically, but mentally made it through this. I could not imagine, but would keep her locked in the room with him for hours, sometimes days at a time while he went on his run. He would try to get her to do it, and she was like, no, I'm not doing speed. I'm not doing that. No. So I don't think, she never said that she had, like, he never forced her to do the drug. She didn't really mention it. I know he offered it to her, like, the very first time, and she was like, no, but and then she never mentioned him offering it again. So I don't think she ever had to, at least she didn't have to do that.
But I mean, that would have been the least of her worries. Yeah, look at all the other things she had to do.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, that's horrible.
Yeah. JC recalled the runs being some of the darkest and most violent times during her captivity. At the age of 14, JC would become pregnant.
What?
At the age of 14, she would become pregnant. It was Easter Sunday of 1994. Nancy and Philip surprised JC with an Easter basket, and she was like so excited about it. It's like it had Easter eggs in it and like chocolate bunnies, and she's like, I was so excited. But then they were like, we noticed that you've been gaining weight and you're kind of walking funny. And JC's like, I know, I'm sorry. I'm trying to watch what I eat. Like, I don't know what's going on. And like, I'll work harder. I am so sorry. Because she's 11 when she is kidnapped. She doesn't, she doesn't fully understand sex and pregnancy and everything. So yeah. She has no clue. No clue that she's pregnant. She said that she had noticed it, and you know, when they said they had noticed that, and when they told her, they were like, yeah, well, we think you're pregnant. And that's how she found out, like, where that comes from and all of that. Again, this woman, just, I am in awe of her. She ended up giving birth at home to a little girl in August end of 1994. So just 4 months after she finds out what pregnancy, like that she's pregnant and pregnancy, she gives birth. The only help she had was Philip and Nancy, who would rent VHS tapes to prepare to help her give birth. That day, she woke up and noticed that she was in a lot of pain, but she had been having pain, so she didn't really think too much of it until the day started going on and they started progressing more and more. And then she's locked in this room. She can't get out. So here she is all alone thinking, I'm fixing to have to give birth all on my own. No help, because she's locked in this room and nobody's coming in there. Finally, at about 5:30 that evening, Nancy finally came into the room to check on JC and realized, oh, she's in labor. So she goes and gets Philip. They get all the supplies they need. She starts pushing, but she's not making any more progress. She got to a certain point, and once she would push, nothing would happen. So Philip checked her and realized the umbilical cord was wrapped around the baby's neck. So he was able to maneuver the baby and unwrap the umbilical cord, which I cannot imagine the pain that she's going through while he's doing this. And she was able to give birth without any other incident, and the baby and her were healthy. Somehow, by some miracle, her and baby made it. Now she's 14 years old and a full-time mother locked in a tiny little room. Nancy and Philip ended up putting cameras in the room so that they could kind of keep an eye on JC and the baby. And they did start giving her a little bit more, quote unquote, freedom. Like, when I say freedom, I use that term very loosely. They would allow her in the house to go do things, or like with the baby, they would come get the baby and spend time with her and leave her locked in the room. Like, it's still so messed up. Philip even ended up choosing the name for the baby and basically told JC she has no input. Like, I'm naming the
Fuck.
baby.
What the hell? This is really pissing me off, Audrey. Can we just stop this episode?
Nancy would take the baby outside and tell JC that the baby needed to get fresh air. Again, they were showing compassion to the baby, but then would leave JC locked in the room. She was relieved when they would do this because at least she could kind of get a little bit of a break. Because again, she's 14 years old. And the baby would get time outside and fresh air. And so she's like, at least that, makes it a little bit better. But just 3 short years later, she gives birth to another baby girl. Finally, after she gives birth to this baby, they again are giving her a little bit more freedom to the house. She still can't leave the house. She can't leave the yard. And when I say freedom, like, they bring her and lock her in a room in the house, or they bring her here. Like, it's still very much controlled. Philip decided, I'm gonna start building a fence around the backyard. And of course, JC's like, thank God, at least the kids can go outside and play. And because he's like, at least you won't be seen. I'll build the fence so you at least can go outside. And she's like, thank God, at least that's something. They also moved her to a large tent outside. So at this point, they're not locking her in the room anymore. They get her like this great big tent and make her stay in the tent outside. Which, let me see, I might have a picture. This is the car that they believe they kidnapped her in. This is the house. The car is kind of blocked by, like, they have it, it's almost like they have it hidden by this fence. That's their house and the garden that they had. Two set sheds, which would be open from the outside, believed to be where JC and her daughter slept. And the white shed is soundproof. So that's the soundproof. You can kind of see the big tents and stuff. And that's the fence that he later built to kind of block the neighbor's view of everything. So that's where they're being held captive.
Gosh, this is crazy.
It's, I
How did
told
they get
you.
away with this for 18
Oh,
years?
just wait. Just
How did no one
wait.
see? No neighbors, no nothing.
Just wait. Just wait. She could have been found. Just wait. She talked about how she didn't mind the tent. At least she could move around freely. She would even decorate the tent. So eventually, which again, I'm kind of getting ahead of myself. Oh, well, I'm gonna continue reading. It's like a couple sentences down. She would decorate the tent the best she could. As the kids got a little bit older, JC began trying to homeschool them. She was able to talk Philip and Nancy into giving her access to a computer to look up lesson plans to be able to teach her children. She made worksheets and activities for them. And again, she got kidnapped at 11 years old. And here she is trying to homeschool her own children.
Yeah, that's insane.
While using the computer one day, Philip realized that she was actually really good at graphic design. And he had her start creating designs for his printing business. So he would print like business cards and stuff for people and make like graphic designs. He started making her do it. Like, it was his quote unquote business. And
Lazy ass
But he would make
motherfucker.
her do all the work. And she was good at it. She was so good at it. She pretty much ran the business on her own. As so much time went on, JC had forgotten what her mother looked like, but she knew that her daughters reminded her of her mom somehow. Like, she said she almost forgot what her mom looked like, but she knew that her children reminded her of her mom in the like their mannerisms and the way they looked. And she's like, something reminds me of my mom through my kids.
So cute though, but so sad.
So,
Like, oh my
so
gosh.
sad. She wanted to get away, but was unsure of the outside world. Didn't know where her mom was. Was she still with Carl? Like, she was scared of the unknown, I guess, because she had been gone for so long at this point. She didn't know where her mom was, and it was instilled in her by Philip that she would never get away. She also had her girls to think about and wanting to keep them safe. At least if she stayed here, she kind of knew what to expect in a weird way. Which I did see after she had the girls, Philip became super ultra religious. And so the sexual assault, I don't know if it completely stopped, but it slowed down like a lot. Of course, she's still kept in these deplorable conditions. She's still being abused, but at least that part kind of stopped. So she never really took the chance to try and escape. She also couldn't bring herself to look up her mom, even though she had access to the internet. She's like, she was afraid it would make her miss her mom even more. And she's like, I couldn't bring myself to do it. One time she was able to build enough trust with Philip and Nancy that they would even let her go to the store every now and then and take short trips out with Nancy. So they would like go thrift shopping and go to the grocery store. And she said the whole time that she was out, she was scared to look at anybody in the eye because she's like, what if they recognize me? Like, she wanted to be recognized, but she was also terrified. And so she just like would not make eye contact with anybody when they were out in public. And she would wonder, like, what if somebody remembers who I am? What if one person remembers and does something and I am saved? But it never happened. When they went out, she was made to go by a different name. I mentioned it on I think it's Alyssa, if I'm not mistaken. One trip while they were out, JC's purse was stolen, which solidified in her mind that the outside world was like scary and dangerous. Because of course, this one time she goes out and her purse ends up stolen. And Philip had handed her money to like hold on to for him, and it was in that purse. And so all that money was stolen. So of course she's terrified, like, what is he going to do? What's going to happen? Like, she said it was a really like dark time for her when that happened, because she was just terrified. Philip and Nancy just confirmed her fears and convinced her that something would happen to her daughters if she left. Philip would become very religious. He started using the Bible as an excuse for everything and blaming the angels for anything that he did. He would end up spending all the money from the printing business and just be like, the angels made me do it. Or like, he would lose his temper and be like, I'm so sorry, the angels made me mad.
What the hell?
Crazy. He then decided to create his own church, saying he was able to speak with the angels and the world, and was going to change the world, and everybody should get to know him. The angels even cured his problem that he had, his sex problem. They just took that away from him. He said that the angels gave him girls because they knew what that is what he needed. He was also convinced that people could like read his mind, and he would even make JC sit in front of like a fan or an AC, anything with like a humming sound, because the humming sound to him created a frequency that would make it easier for people to hear him talking through his mind. And so he would make JC sit in front of the air conditioner and be like, can you hear me? And she'd be like, no, I can't hear you. What are you talking about? Well, she said that one night after hours and hours of doing this, that she thought she could hear the numbers that he was saying. Later, she realized she was just sleep deprived and just, you know, the trauma of everything. She thought she heard him, but she now in a healthy environment realizes I was sleep deprived. It was like a traumatic experience. Like I could not hear his mind, obviously. But when she told him that she could, she was hoping that would make him like reel it back a little bit. Like, oh, okay, cool. We figured this out. Let's move on. No, it escalated. So after she told him, yeah, I could hear it, he was like, obviously I am God's gift to earth. So let's just tell everybody about how I can speak to people with my mind. And just made it that much worse.
Girl did not fix her brain.
In 2009, Philip walked into UC Berkeley Police Department with JC's daughters. So with the two girls, he walked into UC Berkeley Police Department to speak to the police officer that was in charge of security. He wanted to host an event at UC Berkeley to promote his church and spread his gift with the angels. Well, the officer listened to him, and as he talked about the two girls, she kind of grew concerned. Like, there were red flags going up. Like, he'd be like, oh, my nieces, or oh, my daughters. Like, he would never refer to them in the same way. And she's like, something's off with this dude. So she's like, how do I get him to come back and give me more information without alerting him and putting these girls in danger? So she fed into it. She's like, oh, that's amazing. I really want to know more about your gift, but I'm really busy right now. So if you could come back tomorrow, then we can go over all this and we can get your event set up. And he's like, I'm in. I'll be here tomorrow. See you later, girl. So he leaves. So this officer goes to another officer and is like, all right, this dude was in my office. Here's his name. Let's look him up because something's off. So they pull up his rap sheet. And what do you know? This rap sheet was a mile long. He was on parole for kidnapping and rape. He was already on parole for kidnapping and rape. So they call his parole officer. They're like, do you know this guy? He was in our office. He said he had his two daughters. And his parole officer's like, hold up. Yes, he's on parole, but he does not have kids. Like, he's not supposed to have kids. What are you talking about? I've never seen children there when I visit during our monthly appointments because this whole freaking time that JC has been held captive for 18 years, he has had monthly parole visits from police officers.
Are you serious?
The entire time.
And they're not looking around his house?
The entire time. So let's get into that. I'm not sure if I do right now or if it's a little bit later. The parole officer then calls him and he's like, hey, Philip, what's up, my friend? I need to see you. So come to my office. And so Philip, for some reason, decides I'm going to take JC with me this time. So he gets Nancy, JC, and the two girls and takes them to the parole office. They walk in, immediately separate them. They take Philip to one room, they take JC to another room, they take Nancy to a room, and they take the girls to a different room. Well, JC's terrified. She's like, I think I'm in trouble. I think I'm getting arrested. They're going to take my girls. Like, what do I do? So at first, she's kind of keeping the story of, I'm just family visiting. These are his nieces. And they go back to Philip and he kind of gives some other BS story. Then they go back to JC and she gives another BS story. So they're like, something's not adding up. So they go back to Philip and they question him. And he begins unfolding like a napkin. He just outright confesses, her name's JC, and I kidnapped her. So they go back to JC, and they say, hey, Philip just told us your name, and that it's JC, and that he kidnapped you. You need to tell us what is going on. We're here to help. Like, just tell us what's going on. Tell us your name. And she said that she hadn't heard or said her name in so many years that she just couldn't say it, but she'll write it down. So she takes a piece of paper and for the first time in like almost 18 years, wrote her name, JC Lee Dugard, on the paper. And that's when they realize, holy shit.
That's this girl.
That's this girl.
Oh my gosh. And it could have been prevented if the police officers that went to his house would have just checked it out more.
Just wait. Just wait, girl. They immediately arrest Philip and Nancy. They put JC and her daughters into protective custody. The police call Terry to let her know that JC is still alive. And not only is she still alive, but she now has two new granddaughters. JC was terrified of what was going to happen. She didn't know if they would accept her daughters. Would they still accept her? And now she's got to try to figure out what to tell her own daughters as well, because they have been, even though she's the mother figure and she's the one taking care of them, Philip and Nancy made her tell the girls that she was their sister, not their mother.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
My God.
So now she has to figure out how to tell him, I am your mother. I was kidnapped as a child and your father is my abductor.
Imagine getting told that.
I could not. So she finally decides to tell them the truth. She told them that she was taken as a child and the people that they would be meeting tomorrow are actually her family. And the girls, the ages of 15 and 11 at this time. So now they are ages 15 and 11 when they are rescued, took the news very well. They were even excited for JC because she would finally get to see her own mother.
Wait, that's gonna make me cry. So sad.
And that just shows you like what a good mom she was. Even in her circumstances, she was such a good mama with the homeschooling, making sure they have everything they needed. I just can't. I cannot. The next day, JC was scared and nervous to meet her mom. But once she seen her, all those feelings just kind of melted away. Terry had always hoped that they would be reunited, but for it to actually happen is another thing. I told you! It is so hard. JC's little sister Shayna was there. Terry said just a few days before she had gone out and seen the moon and asked, "All right, Jace, where are you at?"
How old is your little sister at this point?
About 18. But that was mom. Mom went outside and seen the moon. Like, this was literally just days before they found her. And she said it was just a big, beautiful moon. She went outside and she's like, "All right, Jace, where are you? Like, I'm ready for you to come home. Where are you?" And she is found days later. And that's when JC told her that she had gone outside right before she was found as well and looked at the moon and was thinking of her. Ever since she had been kidnapped, she avoided the moon since it reminded her too much of her mom and it was too hard. But that night, it was so bright and so big, she couldn't help but to look at the moon and think of her mom. I told you it was a rough one. I told you. In 2001, Philip was sentenced, you ready for it? 431 years in prison at the age of 60 years old.
They clowned his ass.
I'm glad they didn't get him give him the death penalty.
He needed to go to jail.
Do not give him that out. Make him live a miserable life in that jail as long as possible.
What about what was her name?
Nancy, at 55. I don't know. This one's rough. She only received 36 years to life. Which, okay. JC would be awarded a $20 million settlement due to the parole officers and police officers never finding her when she was literally living in Philip's backyard.
Thank you. And that's what she deserves. She probably deserves more. She definitely deserves more.
Since Philip was already on parole, his parole officer had monthly visits to the home. While there, neighbors would often stop the officer and tell them they were concerned that they would see children and a woman in the yard. The kids did not seem to be supervised very well. They would ask Philip about it, and he would always have an excuse saying it was just family visiting and was never investigated further. So he is on parole for kidnapping and a rape, and you have neighbors going to these officers saying something is off, and they never looked into it further.
Those officers should have lost their job.
So Philip was on parole because in 1976, he kidnapped 25-year-old Katie Calloway Hall. He took her to a storage unit in Nevada where he raped her and held her captive for hours. Police officers just happened to be in the area and heard a commotion in the storage unit, so they knocked on the door. Philip asked her if she was going to be quiet or does he need to tie her up. And Katie swore, like, "I'll be quiet, like, no problem, I'll just sit here." So she convinced him and he opened the door and she decides, "That's my chance." As soon as he opens the door, she runs out and starts screaming. Police officers are able to get her to safety and they arrest Philip, where he was sentenced to 50 years in federal prison. Philip Garrido and Nancy Garrido were married in 1978, just 2 years after Philip's 1976 kidnapping and rape conviction in Nevada.
Okay, so why did he get out? What?
I'm getting there.
Make it make sense. He was sentenced to 50 years, but he got out in 2 years and then he's not
out
yet.
He's not out. She meets him in prison while visiting another inmate. Nancy met him while he was in prison. She was visiting another inmate at the time. Philip was then paroled just 11 years later. So he served 11 years after kidnapping and raping a girl. 11 years. Which I've got a picture of them when he first got out of prison. This was then when they were younger, Philip and Nancy. Ugh, big ass noses, ugly ass face, porn stash. Okay, so where are we at? So yeah, parole just 11 years later. Kidnapping JC only 3 years after he was released. Nancy would confide to JC that she hated summer because Philip would force her, again, trigger warning.
Wait, okay. Say the names again.
This is Philip and Nancy, the captors.
Okay.
So Nancy would confide to JC that she hated summers because Philip would force her to go to playgrounds and other places where children might be so he could take pictures and videos of young girls playing. He went as far as to make her go play with the girls, make them do splits, and put them in certain positions just so he could get video and take pictures of the little girls.
What the fudge?
Deplorable human being. JC would later visit Nancy about a year after they were arrested. She kept referring to her as Alyssa, you know, her alias name that they made, her fake name they made her use. And JC would be like, that's not my name. My name is JC. Like, yes, girl. Yeah. Yes. And Nancy would be like, I'm so sorry. It's just so hard for me.
Excuse me?
Nancy, asked if the girls asked about her, and JC told her it's really not even an issue at this time. When the girls are older, if they want to reach out to you and choose to, that's their decision. But as for now, no, hasn't even been thought of. JC, the girls, and her family went through some intense therapy. One of the most helpful one was equestrian therapy, like with horses. Again, because of JC's love for animals, she didn't want to be trapped in a room like, oh, this is how I feel today. That she said the equestrian therapy and one therapist in particular, like, saved her life. Like, she's like, I could not have done it without these things. They've been working really hard to stay out of the, like, public spotlight and just healing themselves, trying to have a normal life as possible. The book was a very hard read, but I would definitely recommend it. Very inspiring, very heartfelt.
How long did it take you to read?
It really wasn't that long. I think, like I said, I listened to it on Libby, and I think it was only like 7 or 8 hours. So yeah, that is the story of JC Dugard.
Wow.
That was a rough one. I told you I was going to cry again. I think I did twice. I guess so many different parts of that story I resonate with. JC when she's younger and going through that with her stepfather, and then the mom and happened to have those, not that I blame her mom at all, that's not what I'm doing, but to think back and be like, what if I would have given her a kiss that night? What if I would have done this? What, you know, just all that mom guilt. I just could not imagine. And then everything that JC went through mentally, physically, and come out and just be an amazing mother and an amazing person. And she's like creating these, I can't even think of what it is, but like she's helping people that have come from these situations with like housing and therapy and like doing all this good work for people that went through similar things that she did.
Yeah.
And it is just so, so amazing. Yeah. So that in the name of the book again, which I'm going to post it, is JC Dugard, A Stolen Life, a memoir. So, and like you can see the little pine cone that she put on there, kind of symbolizing her freedom. So, all right. Well, now that we got the saddies, now that I just ripped your heart out of your chest.
Right. That was actually really sad.
I know.
But I mean, it wasn't super sad because there was a happy ending. She did get out.
She did get out. And that monster got 400, what was it, 432 years or whatever. Bitch, you are dying there.
I better not ever get the chance of parole or I will make a petition.
I wonder if there's ever been jailhouse justice for him. Like, against him. You know what I mean? Not that I condone violence.
I can say I didn't.
If they did, I wouldn't be mad at it. I wouldn't be mad. Let it happen.
So. He deserves to be sucker punched in his head.
I just.
Multiple times.
And Nancy, she was completely
aware of the whole situation going on and didn't say anything.
Helping with it. Not only with JC.
And then she got jealous. Like, you're really insecure little bitch, huh? Come at us.
And not just with JC, but then going to these playgrounds for these innocent little girls and putting them in these provocative poses. So your
disgusting
nasty ass husband sitting over there with the camera. Like, are you fucking kidding me? I just,
oh my God.
Oh my God. I just can't.
She's going to be getting released soon.
Let's
how
look.
Many, probably within the next 10 years. Because if she got sentenced in 2001, she got sentenced how many years? Like 30?
36.
Yeah.
Will Nancy Garrido. 2029. August of 2029. She is incarcerated at the California Institution for Women in Ohio, Riverside County.
So she's getting out like
just a few years.
Four? That's horrible. That's
took wrong. That baby's life and her the children's lives because they were stuck in captivity for 11 and 15 years themselves.
She deserved the same amount of time that he got. She helped with the kidnapping.
Yes.
Hello, SD Chair, do a solo. Like, what are you doing?
That's what I don't understand. What was the judge
thinking? Like,
I don't see how she didn't get more time because, I mean, she
36 years, that's it?
She was completely complicit in it. Like, she knew what was going on. She was hiding it. She was, I mean, maybe she didn't do the actual assault, but she was hiding it for her husband.
She got sentenced half the amount that she had JC for. 18 years?
No.
18 plus 18?
36.
That's wrong.
Because yeah.
Not only did she take that away from JC, but they took it away from the first baby that was born. The second baby that was born.
JC's mother. JC's like, sister.
Like, they need to count all of these lives that they take like took away from.
It doesn't just affect the victim.
They haven't even had time to fully, like, maybe, but like, I feel like they need more time. Like, what?
Yeah,
I don't see. He's gonna get released, and it's just gonna bring back so much.
And the fear, when she's gonna be released, the fear, because you gotta think about her children. What if she comes after her children? Mm-hmm. Like, what if she does?
What if her children right now have kids? Like, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
What if it happens again? Someone that messed up in the mind?
Yeah.
It's gonna happen again. She should not be out in the streets. That is unsafe.
She's just completely complicit in it, and it's just like, I just don't understand it. I don't understand it.
Department of California, Police Department, do something.
Do better.
We need a retrial quickly to sentence her another lifetime in prison, because what the hell?
I just don't understand it. All right. Well, I guess that's it.
That was a really messed up story, man.
It was really sad. It was really rough. All right. Well,
guess that's the end.
That's it. That's our rant and rave. Now I'm sad.
Now I'm angry. Like,
let's go rage clean my house. I figured it was worth a shot. I thought it was worth a shot.
I'm joking right now.
All right, guys. Well, don't forget to check out the Paranormal War Room. Go like, rate, subscribe, follow, help our comment, algorithm.
Comment.
Push it out. We need some more listeners. So
tell your friends, tell your mamas, tell your aunties, tell your cousins, tell your grandmamas, tell your dads.
And it's officially October. So. Happy spooky season.
Yes. So excited.
Yes. All right. We'll see y'all next week.
Bye.